Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Let Reiki teach you. This is our theme for the month. And as I'm interviewing people with the theme, I realize that each of us has our own lessons to learn and our own themes. My theme has been to understand that in the absolute world, there's no right and wrong. Things just are as they are. And if I'm able to accept them, then I get to choose whether I'm affected in what might be called a negative way or affected in a positive way. And what I realize is those terms aren't necessarily accurate either. Because what I've learned in Reiki is that something that looks horrifying in the beginning can turn out to be the greatest gift. And this has been my lesson over the last couple of years, very, very acutely. I have with me today Yoli Dinas. She's living in Santa Fe now, and it's wonderful to have her back on the show and to listen to her in her wisdom speak from her own heart about what Reiki has taught her. Yoli, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phyllis.
And just for our listeners who may not have listened to your other show that we had, I would love for you to talk a little bit about or share with us about your path in Reiki. How did you meet Reiki? And yeah, how long have you been practicing and so on?
Well, it was my sense that Reiki was always wanting to make itself known to me. And it happened that at a time my sister-in-law had been initiated years before, and I had had some curiosity about it. I had taken steps to seek out initiation shortly after I was leaving a position where there were several individuals that practiced Reiki, and got the name of a master. I walked around with it in my pocket for a year. And then reunited with an old friend, and she was carrying around flyers because she was very excited about the fact that the Grand Master was coming to El Paso to teach first degree Reiki. And I felt like, well, this is what I've been waiting for. And so that's when we first met. I believe it was 2005. Mm-hmm. I was initiated in first degree. And at first, I wasn't sure that it was, you know, as we say in the real world, working. I didn't know exactly what it was I was doing, but I could feel changes going on, and it became very much a part of my daily life. And then the following year, I actually, in January, we got word of the fact that my mother was getting ready to pass. She went into hospice, and I had the opportunity. One of her caregivers was a Reiki practitioner, and so we had some opportunities to provide Reiki for her and then help her in her transition. And it was a beautiful experience. And then I had the opportunity to do second degree that following August, which I also pursued. By that time, my husband was very intrigued by the whole process, and so he'd gone through initiation and then went through second degree initiation, and so now we're both second degree practitioners, and we use it in our daily lives, we use it in our practice. It really has just totally immersed itself in us.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Wow, interesting. It's so interesting, this phrase that I remember from the story of Mikao Usui, and he found what he was looking for. Mm-hmm. And I just think that this is such a common, soulful experience where, as Paul Mitchell says in his story, well, I didn't know I was looking for anything, but when I found Reiki, I thought to myself, oh, this is what I've been looking for.
Yes, exactly.
And I find this a really common experience, but very beautiful. It's an experience that joins us together, I think, as Reiki students. And another experience that joins us together is this knowing that there are some very major life lessons that are in some way across the board, they're all the same. It maybe leads us to the same place, but they're clothed in different words.
Mm-hmm.
So because of our theme today, I'm wondering, what has Reiki taught you? And do you have an umbrella that you put all these different experiences under? Or is there more of a list of things, a kind of logical progression that has followed you? Or both?
Well, I use more of the roots of a tree analogy than an umbrella.
Okay.
I think the main root, the tap root, that it's taught me is trust.
Let's and talk more about that.
That's been a major issue for me my whole life. My whole life has been about control and about, you know, if you want something done right, do it yourself. And you can't trust others to do for you. Basically, a lesson of the world is not safe. You have to look out for yourself. And as Reiki has been teaching me, as Reiki has been working through me, Reiki has taught me. That's why I believe that the taproot is trust. There's a lot of things that stem off of that taproot, like giving up control.
How do you do that?
By trusting.
By trusting, okay.
By reminding myself that all things are as they should be. And I think that's one of the many things that Reiki has taught me as part of trust, that I have to allow the process to be what it needs to be. And that there is a gift in every event that I experience. Even the MS that I was diagnosed with in 2003, I had some sense of appreciating and giving thanks to it for what it could teach me. But it was only with Reiki that I realized that it was like Reiki brought that to me as a part of that trust lesson. As a part of that waking up and realizing that I'm not in control of anything.
We think we are. Or?
We think we are. We'd like to believe we are. But the reality is, the energy is.
So, I just want to go back and clarify. When you said that you were diagnosed with MS, that's multiple sclerosis, right?
Yes.
And I remember this now, but in the last years, I haven't heard anything about this. So I'm just wondering, what happened to that?
I consider myself healed.
Wonderful.
The doctor has been very, very excited about it because I've been off medication for a year now. And it is because, you know, I tried to explain to the doctor that I was doing daily treatments and that, you know, that I really believed that Reiki had played a major portion of in my healing, a major part in my healing. And he said, well, that's good. You need to meditate and you need to relax. And he really had no sense of what Reiki was. But that was okay because I knew. And I have 5 lesions on the right side of my brain. And they are the same 5 lesions that were there when I was diagnosed, which is unheard of. The expectation is that a patient under medication will present with 3 to 5 new lesions a year.
Huh.
And I was diagnosed in 2003.
So it hasn't progressed any?
It has not progressed.
Wow.
And it has not manifested symptomatically either, because I do my daily treatments and I stay very aware of self-care.
Uh-huh.
Which is another thing Reiki has taught me. It's kind of like, you know, the energy can only do what I allow it to do. What I lend myself, what I surrender myself to do.
Okay, say that again.
The energy can only do as much as I surrender myself to it.
Energy can only do what I surrender myself to do. Can you say more?
Well, I think that's one of those trust lessons that it taught me, mm-hmm. which is, you know, the way I put it the other night when we were talking was to get out of my own way.
Uh-huh.
To stop being a limitation, to stop trying to manage things, but simply to surrender to it and allow it to be what it needs to be.
Uh-huh. Do you have a story that can exemplify that?
Well, where I am today, I think, is my most championing story right now. You know, many years ago, I had declared, when I was working in protective services in Texas, that one day I would be the commissioner of protective services, which is like what I'm doing now in New Mexico. I just put it out in the universe and went on about my happy way. But it seems that as I got out of my own way and stopped trying to make things happen, and just continued to do my treatments, a week before Christmas I got a call from the governor wanting to know what I was up to. I thought she was wanting referrals and she was wanting me to take this appointment. I was appointed on the 2nd of January, and I reported for work in the middle of January, and I'm managing this huge agency in New Mexico, which is my passion and my heart, and I really believe it's all because I just got out of the way and continued to do my practice and continued to trust that I would be led to wherever I was supposed to be.
But didn't you have moments of fear and doubt?
Sure. You're talking to the woman who learned from a mother that when there's nothing to worry about, you need to worry because something's going to happen.
Great.
And it's only with the help of Reiki and learning to trust that I've made progress. But sure, I had those moments. I had a lot of moments of self-doubt. You know, what did I think I was doing, accepting such a humongous responsibility? And pick up and leave where I had grown up and
right.
My whole life existed there, and pick up and come to Santa Fe, and knowing that it's so costly to live here, and it was just a whole whirlwind of doubts and questions. But every time, I would just remember to go within. I would do some slow, deep breathing. I would do a little bit of Reiki. I did a lot of mental, emotional treatments during that time.
Uh-huh.
And it all settled out.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that I did was I did a lot of praying, and I did a distance treatment on this decision.
Mm-hmm.
And the combination of the two was basically directed at, if this is truly what is intended, then let it be very easy. And I could not have asked for an easier transition. There, I could not imagine an easier transition than the one that occurred. So it just brought, the whole experience brought me to an even deeper level of surrender, which I'm amazed. I step outside of myself and I look and I don't recognize this person.
Really?
Oh yeah, completely. You know, there's a sense of peace and knowing that I never imagined I would be able to have.
Uh-huh.
And trust. I bring it back to trust. I really believe that's where it's coming from. I'm trusting that Reiki is working with me, in me, for me, and that it's all part of a greater plan.
Uh-huh. That's amazing. And I don't know. I have to say that I have the same experience lately. And I just involved in finishing up a huge project of writing a prospectus, you know, for the Reiki home, which for some of you I will talk about in later shows. But right now, what happened was that I also felt like I really needed to go with my partner and a friend camping for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, right in the middle of the whole thing. And on Sunday night, Joyce said, "Well, do you really want to do this? Like, is this something that you should be doing?" And I said, "Yeah, I mean, this is what I'm supposed to be doing somehow. I don't know why, but this is how mm-hmm. what I'm supposed to be doing." I had no internet connection, no phone service for really. And for 3.5 days. And one of the things that was occurring is that my companions who were helping me write this prospectus and so on said, "This is really brave of you to just go off and be in the wilderness for 3.5 days in the yes. middle of all this." And I thought, well, that, I don't know if I'd call it courageous, but it just felt like the right thing to do. And there wasn't any doubt in my mind about the continuance of the process, or that things would get done on time, or whatever. And I guess that's really surrendering to the energy and trusting that it'll all happen. But then I think, well, was it procrastination? But it didn't feel like procrastination to me. So I'm interested in your comments.
No, I don't think so. I think it really is. I think that we exist in, the three-dimensional, four-dimensional existence, our existence in this dimension leads us to judge and evaluate everything.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that, as the precepts tell us, Reiki is not about judgment. And us as spiritual beings are not about judgment.
Uh-huh.
And so, in that same vein, there is no procrastination, just as there is no time.
Uh-huh.
It's all a matter of, we have as much as we need.
Even time.
I truly believe that. I've learned that. The more I fret about not having, I can assure myself I won't have. The more I surrender to the belief that I have as much as I need, I have time to spare.
Huh. Well, I have to say, from a person who is a multitasker, this is, you've hit on one of my other really interesting places. Like, I don't think that I worry anymore about not having time, because I can't, you know, like my capacity for multitasking is gone. So like when I was camping, I did go into town and spend like a half an hour on my computer just to make sure that there weren't any urgent messages, and there weren't. But it was an interesting place for me to just let that go for the other 3 days or 2 days and feel that it was all going to be okay and the timing would be fine. And I thought, well, am I being irresponsible? And then I just checked inside myself and thought, no. And then it was just this very new, weird experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this is part of my learning.
I know it was for me. And I understand what you're saying about a weird new experience, and because it feels like a new pair of shoes. It's like, I know this is going to work, but I'm not quite sure that it's a good fit. You know, it's
right.
And so, but with time, it gets to be a real comfortable fit, and it has allowed me to stop judging myself.
Uh-huh.
So that I can allow myself the peace of just surrendering, of listening, of following.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see, in looking back at this little incident just in this last week, that I didn't hook into this part about being irresponsible or this part about procrastination. I just thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, well, no, that doesn't feel like what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing, but that's not it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's interesting because I just wrote an email to somebody and they said, well, how do I know that this is the truth? And I go, well, the only person that knows that it's the truth is you, because you have to feel it inside yourself. And I can't tell you whether, you know, this is the truth or not, because that would just be my perception.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to myself, well, I should just listen to my own words.
There
you
go. That's
a good idea, huh?
We teach most what we need to learn.
Right. I really was irritated with this particular phrase for a long time, but I'm getting it.
Yeah, well, it's irritating because we'd like to think that we're teaching what we already know, but I've discovered that that's really not the case.
So how does that happen anyway, do you think? What's your theory on that?
The teaching what we need to know?
Yeah.
I don't know that I really understand it. What I've experienced is that opportunities present themselves where I have to draw on my experience and listen within and then step out and teach it to someone else. And as I'm teaching it, it really makes sense to me all of a sudden.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like, it's not that we need to know it. We already know it. But know it in the sense of the head and not know it in the sense of the full experience of it.
Uh-huh.
And it's only in teaching it and sharing it with someone else that it becomes our own.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's been my experience.
That's mine too, actually. And sometimes it's a little embarrassing, but I find it quite interesting because when I do facilitate workshops for different things, I often find myself being drawn in as a participant.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people ask me, like, how can you be a facilitator and a participant all at the same time? And I said, well, how could I not be?
Exactly.
And I find that that's a gift that Reiki has offered me, is a way to be the observer and the observed, to be the treater and the treatee, and to be the facilitator and the participant all at the same time. Sometimes it can get confusing, but most of the time it's really a well-rounded kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, there is a question that occurred to me then. It's like, sometimes we read a book or we go to a workshop and we admire the person who's doing the facilitation and so on so much, and we want to emulate them. You know, we want to be them. But it never occurred to me to say for myself, well, this is actually what they need to be teaching, because they need somehow to teach it, because this is what they need to learn. I mean, this is an interesting realization right in this moment. It's like, when I go to somebody because I feel like they're an expert, are they really an expert, or are they willing to participate in everyone becoming an expert? Whatever that means, right? So it's it's a very interesting thing. So, you know, a lot of times this gets into mastery. It's like people come to Reiki masters thinking that they are experts in Reiki, which is a non-existent thing for me. And there's no expert in Reiki. There's just people who practice longer, have more experiences, and have more questions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that describes a master pretty accurately. It describes me, I think, very, very accurately. So I just wonder how that is for you, and I don't know if this has anything to do with our topic, but it certainly is something that just came up for me. What do you think?
I think that's interesting. That really makes a lot of sense. You know, I found myself, what I've seen when I find myself really admiring someone, is I found myself asking, what are the qualities in that person that you desire to experience? But now that you've put that in this sense, that makes a whole lot of sense. You know, it's just, I think that it's more of, what I'm admiring is their willingness to learn by doing, learn by teaching.
Well, I need to go back, I think, to my own experience of Reiki. Like when I first started practicing Reiki, Reiki was some kind of amorphous, maybe it was even in my imagination, meaning that it may be true or it may not be true. But now I know that imagination is always a part of our own experience. So it is truth for us. And that Reiki, the energy, has substance to me. It's just as physically present as a table or a chair or a tree, which is very interesting. But that switch from it being something that might be imaginary to being of substance also is also true about all the other experiences that I have. So if I don't have an experience of trust in myself because of my experiences or what I came into this life with or whatever, and all of a sudden Reiki has given me the experience not just of Reiki itself but of trust, then it creates a substantial part of who I am and gets embodied literally in my cellular structure.
Yes.
Yes?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was talking about.
Uh-huh.
And it alters you. It altered me. I feel that my cellular structure was altered. I feel that my whole being was altered with that experience of trust. Because then there is no more questioning. There's no need for questioning.
So, in your trusting, then Were there like highlight experiences that you had that you went, oh, this is one of my lessons in trust?
Really, I wish I could say that there were. The most recent that I can think of is, well, no, that's true. Now that I think about it, I was thinking that, you know, my appointment was my most recent. Oh, this is one of those highlights in trust. But I was faced with some real serious decisions that needed to be made, and I was really struggling because I was going to have to meet with the governor, and I wasn't sure that she and I were on the same sheet of music, and I was beginning to doubt myself again, and then I remembered that there wasn't any need for that. And it was only by going through the meeting and having it be so easy and so successful that I was able to say, ah, this is what trust gives you. This is what you have to remember. And it should be so much a part of me, you know, for me, it should be so much a part of me that I don't have to remember, that it just is.
Well, so here's a really interesting dynamic. You know, in my research and delving into different things, I've been talking to my dear friend Ben Haggard, and he gave me a few what I would call sort of energetic constructions, like different ways that energy works. And he said that there are always two seemingly opposing energies. There's ideas and imagination, like, you know, things that we dream of, we want to do, we think are good ideas and so on. And then there's another force that comes that looks like it's opposing it, called, I can't remember the word that he used, but I would call it like resistance. But it's not really resistance, we just see it as resistance. Mm-hmm. And it's oftentimes it's couched in words like, well, the reality is, yes, or what's possible is, or I don't get it, or whatever. So, mm-hmm. you know, I have this idea that I can do something. Somebody else says, well, you don't have enough money, or you don't have enough time, or you don't have... people won't support you or whatever. And then he said, you know, what happens is you can compromise. Each of these two viewpoints can compromise, and that makes it less than. So it becomes a non-creative possibility. Mm-hmm. But if you raise the level of observation in this dynamic, then you come to a more creative reconciliation of these two forces. And if you use 100% of these two forces, then you really come to true creation, because you have to have both of those things in order to go to your next level of understanding. Mm-hmm. Can you follow what I'm saying?
Completely.
So the thing that I've been thinking about ever since he told me this, which was about 3 weeks ago, was that I either have it on the outside of myself, so I create these people in my life who always give me reality, because usually I'm just, you know, in these crazy... What people might call crazy idea moments. And I go, oh, wow, I'd like to do that. And then somebody comes and says, well, I don't know. And when I'm teaching, what happens in those moments is that because I'm teaching Reiki, the paradoxes of what I'm saying or what is being... in the conversation gets raised to another level, so people can hold both of the viewpoints, both of the perspectives together, mm-hmm. and understand that they can exist together, and they can exist in the Reiki practice. Like, for instance, I say in my classes, you know, be sure to learn these hand positions. And then at the end of the class, I say, and Reiki goes where it's needed. And then people's brains go, what?
Yes, I remember.
And it's like, well, how come she's so adamant about these hand positions? And, well, if Reiki goes where it's needed, why don't we just put our hands anywhere? And that's a great question. But when you take it to the level of creativity and creation and allowing both of those to remain 100% true, as it were, then you really have this platform where Reiki gives you this point of creativity every time you sit down to do a Reiki treatment.
Exactly.
Yeah? So I think to myself, when I start what you call doubting oneself, is that I don't know if you can eliminate that. Because I wonder if that just is the force that allows us to get pushed up into this next level of understanding.
That's a great observation. My goal was to eliminate it, but now it's like, no, because that's the challenge, to go beyond to another level.
Right.
To go to a new level of creativity.
Right. Well, that's what I'm experimenting with. So I'm saying, okay, so I can go, well, I don't know, are we really going to be able to do this, or am I really going to be able to, you know, pay my rent next month or whatever? And then I just go, well, okay, so that's this other force that's coming toward you. And what you need to do is to hold both of those equally and just somehow move up. So then this becomes a mental construct for the very purpose of sending a Reiki treatment to these kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't compromise either one. It moves it to another level of consciousness. And that's where we find our creative process. So, this has been so interesting for me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that we, you know, that we have in our lives these people, you know, and you think, well, why is this person in my life? And then I go, well, because. So now, you know, and I won't do it right away, but in the next few months or so, I'm going to write to all these people who have been these blocks for me. You know, like these people who I love dearly, and I really wish that we had an easy relationship, but every time it's like this, like, why can't you just say something nice? Or why can't you just support what I'm doing? No, they have to figure out all the reasons why not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have to just talk to them and say thank you.
That makes total sense.
You know, for being this person in my life, because I really need that. I needed to come up against this force that forces me up to another level.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, we often get stuck in this place of resistance is a block and it's negative. But resistance doesn't necessarily need to be negative. It just is so.
It may just need to provide the friction that we need to be able to move up.
Right. So what you did is send a little Reiki, do a little prayer, mm-hmm. have a little quiet moment, but in those three things, that's all allowing yourself to leave from one level of seeing to the next level. Fascinating, huh?
It is. Who would have guessed?
Yes, who would have guessed? So this particular construct that Ben gave me has been extremely useful and will, I think, continue to be very useful in my interpersonal relationships. And he and I have had this relationship, you know, in the 30 years that I've known him. And so it allows me to understand and embrace that part of our relationship that I've always loved, as well as the parts where we have a great time cooking together, or we have a great time, you know, picking out a paint color, or we have a great time, you know, designing an apartment or, mm-hmm. you know, a building or something like that. So it's been It's been very, very interesting, and I give that to you and to the listeners, and to experiment with that and see how it comes out.
Thank you. I love that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know it would apply, but you know, when you said, "Oh, I have my doubts," and then I did Reiki, I went, "Oh, interesting."
And I hadn't connected the doubts being the resistance, but that's total sense.
Well, you know, people sometimes say, "Oh, I want to get rid of my judgment," but I keep telling people, you know, that is not the point, to get rid of your judgment. The point is, what do you do with that judgment?
Yes. Yes.
Because it's human to judge. I mean, it's our instinct. And if we don't judge, then what happens is we don't really take care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is another point about trust. Like, do we just let the energy of the universe, so to speak, just toss us around like, you know, a little boat in a storm? Or do we actually participate?
I think it's participation is important.
Yeah. So, you know, this gets into the word surrender. So sometimes, especially I think for myself, whenever I heard the word surrender in the early days, like in the 1980s, I would just cringe. And because what surrender meant for me was to give up myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I had a dictionary right here. But I don't think that's really what surrender means. Do you have a sense about what surrender is for you?
My truer definition of surrender in my own experience is giving in to another.
Giving in to another, well, that's like scary.
Mm-hmm. But that's really, I mean, where I'm still participating in the process, but I'm allowing another, whether it's the energy or an interpersonal relationship, to be a part of that decision-making, that action, that doing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Hmm. Well, that's not helpful.
Sorry.
In the sense that now I have to think about this more. To give in to another.
Because to me, surrendering is like putting my hand in yours.
Uh-huh.
And saying, okay, for a while I'll let you lead, and for another while you'll let me lead, and together we're gonna make this happen.
Uh-huh. So surrender is more like being able to join together with someone or some energy,
mm-hmm,
and walk together.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's surrender for me.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Well, I can surrender. I can accept that in my life, because I see that that's really been great for me in the last few months, you know. Or to surrender to doctors. I mean, that was really a trip. When I was going through my chemotherapy, you know, my doctors, I'm sure they just rolled their eyes whenever they thought that they had an appointment with me, because instead of 15 minutes, they would be there for 40.
Uh-huh.
With all of my questions and stuff. And then in the end, I would end up doing it. But I had to ask. I mean, I had to participate. It was really important for me, because I saw in my childhood that for my dad, who was an MD, that was in the days where, you know, alternative medicine wasn't available or wasn't even thought of, really. Mm-hmm. And so the doctors had all the power. But what I realized is that people actually gave them their power.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't really surrender in the way that you were talking about. It was more like giving up, mm-hmm, and saying, I'll do whatever you say because you're the boss. And there's something about that that I think that's maybe where my resistance comes from, you know, surrendering as in giving myself up.
For me, the old definition of surrender is to stop resisting. And I'm not ready to stop resisting. I still have to question. I still have to be a part of the evaluative process.
Uh-huh.
But I'm willing to join with another.
Right.
Person, energy, whatever. Mm-hmm. Holding the right to be a participant.
Right.
In that process.
Uh-huh. Cool. Wow, that's really interesting. So, trust, surrender, loss of control?
No.
Okay, good.
Voluntarily giving up control. Letting go of control. I don't consider loss and letting go the same thing.
Okay, talk about that.
For me, loss means I had no choice. It was taken from me.
Oh, and that's abuse, really?
Yes.
I mean, in the...
It is.
Yeah.
Whereas letting go is, it's a voluntary choice on my part to choose something different. And I think it's a really dynamic, important choice and a very important difference in those two phrases.
So when you let go of control, is that right? Mm-hmm. See, I can't even remember. So when I let go of control, is it like a moment-by-moment decision?
It is. It is for me. And having been an incredibly codependent person, you know, someone who had to get approval from everyone because I was a good person and I was doing for everyone and I was taking care of everyone and making all their choices and, you know, 110 different experiences there. What it's taught me is that the one phrase that I always come back to when I'm needing to remind myself is letting go doesn't mean to stop caring about someone. It means to stop caring for someone. And so then a lot of times that's allowed me to within myself say, because I care about this person, I have to allow them their own experience. I can't expose my wishes on them because I'm interfering with their experience of their life.
Oh, so now what you're saying is, possibly, is that when I trust, I have to also trust others.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, that can be really tough.
Yes, it can. It continues to be. I'm still in that process. I'm still walking that path. But I've come way, way, long way from where I was.
What does that feel like?
Weird. At times it feels almost out of body. At times it feels like I don't even recognize who I am. And at other times I'll ask the question, is this who I really am? And the answer comes back, yeah, it is. And it's okay.
So do people feel in reaction to that? Do people feel, uncared for?
Not at all.
No? Because that's what is kind of drilled into, I think, well, I can just speak for myself, my head, is that if I don't try to do this for people, then will they know that I care about them?
I think that my experience has been people appreciate and respect more that I allow them to be trusted, that I trust them to do what is right for themselves. Than to try and impose what I believe is right for them. There's lots of ways to communicate caring for someone. And there's lots of ways of communicating caring about someone. And I've just found that people prefer to be communicated from the communicated with from that I care about you. That I'm going to care for you. Let me do this for you. And it's been my experience that when I try to care for someone, the interpretation of that is you think I'm inadequate, you think I'm incapable, you think I'm, well, I've heard the words, you think I'm stupid.
Right.
When I can communicate caring about someone, then they can appreciate that I am concerned for them, but I am willing to allow them to experience whatever it is they need to experience.
Right.
But it's not easy. Especially when you're talking about people, if you're talking about individuals that you have a deep, intimate relationship with, like your children or your partner, for me it's much harder than in a working setting or in a collaborative setting.
Right, for sure. Like I just think about my own experience of being able to accept however people come to Reiki is what needed to happen, like that the master that initiated them or how they were initiated in first degree was exactly right for them at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had had another choice, they might have chosen something different, but they didn't. So we all do the best we can.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But in my private life...
exactly.
Like, what is she doing?
Mm-hmm.
She must need my help, so I need to tell her. So I just think about I just wrote an email to a dear friend of mine who's been sick, well, in my mind, been sick a lot in the last few months. And I said, should I be concerned? I think that's one way, anyway, that I can extend myself without feeling like I'm not caring.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can ask, and they can say, well, no, because I know what's going on, and if you send me a bit of Reiki, that would be great, or whatever. But at least it opens up the conversation about it without feeling like, oh, I'm worried about you, or you need to do this, or...
Exactly. You're expressing that you're thinking about someone, that you want to see what's best for them come to be, but you're not trying to predict for them what that should be.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. Well, learning to trust has a lot of ramifications.
Yeah. That's why I called it the taproot. Because I think there's a whole lot of other little roots that run off of it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Wow. Great. Well... Do you think that simply giving yourself daily Reiki without really thinking about these instances or these kind of situations will allow this transformation to take place of trust?
I believe it has.
So you didn't like say, okay, I'm doing this Reiki treatment and I'm going to learn to trust myself?
No. I believe that Reiki... showed me what it taught me.
Uh-huh.
After it had already taught me.
Oh, interesting.
It wasn't like I was asking, because, you know, the interesting thing is if I already think I know what I need, then I'm not really trusting.
Right.
And so it was like, it was just doing the treatments. When an issue came up, doing a distance treatment on the situation. But no, it was only when I did the distance treatment in preparation for this that it really took form in terms of what it is that Reiki has taught me.
Uh-huh.
And I believe will continue to teach me. But I just was open to... I really wasn't even thinking in terms of Reiki teaching me. I was just thinking in terms of Reiki working in me for, you know, my restructuring, realigning, whatever it was I needed to clear my channels of energy to make me whatever it was I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. I just noticed that you didn't say what I was supposed to be doing.
No.
That's really neat.
It's been very clear to me that it's about what I'm supposed to be. Doing has nothing to do with it. Doing is a secondary thing to being.
Well, I think with that, listeners, we're going to say adios to Yoli, because that's a biggie. Doing is secondary to being.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, put that in your Reiki treatments and see what happens. Thank you, Yoli.
Thank you, Phyllis.
You're welcome, and it was a pleasure. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.